Now this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow. Iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paulo Di Canio. So kick it off with the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles. Said I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles, I'm forever blowing bubbles.
All right, welcome to the American West Ham podcast. I'm excited to say this. Season 1, episode number 10. We hit double digits, probably. What you think? I am so excited I can't even do the intro right. I'm one of your co-hosts, Tony. I also got Brawley with me.
What's going on, Tony? How are you?
Well, obviously, I'm pretty excited that we got 10 episodes now. People wanted to listen to us long enough that we got 10. So that's pretty cool. We're coming to you after a freaking win. I am absolutely stoked right now. How are you feeling?
Great. A win that I should add that I predicted on the show. I said clean sheet, which I got right. I was only off by one goal. I said 2-0. Honestly, when I left the show, I honestly, in my head, I was thinking over and over. I was like, man, there's no way that's going to happen. I'll probably sound like an idiot. But sure enough, Joe Hart didn't have to stop a shot, so that helps. Whenever your goalie doesn't have to stop a shot, and the team played extremely well. So I'm very happy. I'm excited to do a show after a win for once. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, did I predict? No, I did 1-1, didn't I?
Yeah, you did a 1-1 draw. Yep.
Well, I'm going to say, folks, that I am happily, happily wrong. So we do have a lot of cool stuff coming up for you today. I'm going to run through the outline that we're going to rock. So a few things we're going to talk about is obviously our intro. We got a little fun news around the podcast. We're going to talk about the Southampton game, of course. We're going to do 2 or 3 Q&As. We have to talk about the American West Ham potential meetup. A lot of talk about that going around, and we'll give our thoughts and opinions and try to help facilitate what we can and go from there. Possibly discuss about the club coming to America. We briefly touched on that last week. We have an interview with Ben, a friend of the podcast who has been a loyal listener, actually went to his first ever West Ham match. So Brawley was busy all day, so I did a quick little interview with Ben, and he shares his thoughts on his first ever game, and then we'll just finish it out. Sound good to you, Brawley?
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds great. And I just want to remind everyone about our T-shirts that we have selling. We've actually started moving more of them. Awesome. Super stoked about that. You can find those on our fancy website that I love. It's www.AmericanWestHamPodcast.com. And our T-shirts are for sale on there for $25. We do all sizes. So we can make it work for you if you need extra smalls or you're a heavier set fellow. We got the big sizes. That's because that's one of the sizes that I need for sure. You can also find us on Twitter at West Ham Pod USA. Be sure to follow us. I'm sure almost all of you already do, but please tell your friends, tell your buddies, follow us on Twitter,
retweet, and then, share,
yeah,
all that.
Absolutely, get our name out there as much as possible. And we've also been getting some emails finally. I know I'm skipping around here, but it's really cool. People are using our email account, which is, if you don't know it, it's AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. We've actually received like 3 or 4 emails this week sending us some kind words. And so we thank everyone for that. It's nice to wake up and I have some email alerts on my phone that I can read, and it really does bring us joy to hear people say nice things about us. I know Tony wants to shout out A-Rob. I know he usually does it, but I'm going to do it this week because he hooked us up with the great song. And I still get hyped when I listen to it at the end of every episode. So that's A-Rob Music on Twitter. He does great work. He did great work for us. So be sure to give him a follow. We talked about Ben already. You talked about Ben, but we have a great interview from him coming up.
Yep.
So thanks to Ben for taking some time out of his day to
all the way in London
come on the show. Yeah, what was it? It was like 9 p.m. out there when you recorded it?
No, him and I chatted probably around 11, 11:30 his time. So similar to, well, not 6 a.m. like Bobby, but Ben, we do appreciate you coming on as well. And like you said, Brawley, already the kind emails, folks. I really appreciate that. It helps keeping us go. And it's really cool to hear sometimes when people actually complimented. We do have a lot of interaction, a lot of listens, but it's pretty cool. And also, we are doing this whole thank you, blah, 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 social media stuff at the beginning while we have your attention. So let's actually get into the good stuff now. Southampton. Let's talk before we even get into the lineups and before we get into the actual meat of the game. I think that we should get into the atmosphere going into the match. There was a lot of talk, in my opinion, about what the atmosphere is going to be like when it goes from talking about the heightened security, when we talk about the atmosphere, how the fans, ourselves, the supporters are feeling at home and abroad, when it goes into talking about the – I mean, did you see the pictures of the barriers they put around the director's box?
Yeah, I saw that. It looked like there was like glass put up, glass put up in front of them.
And yeah, and they had these like metal barriers as well that it was just weird. I was like, okay, sure. But in my opinion, none of that would have been necessary if when we talk – okay, so I'm just going to wind it up a little quick. When we talk about the actual performances on the pitch, I think that really influences how us supporters react. For example, the players give 110%. I think the fans are going to, we're going to get behind the team. We're going to sing Bubbles extra loud. And it's going to be a fantastic performance, both in the stands and on the pitch. When the players aren't giving it their all, they're not chasing the ball down, I think that's when the hostility started. I thought the Burnley game was an absolute disgrace. I didn't think that they played well at all. And the fans mirrored the performance on the field. Simple as that.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It's the effort is pretty much, it translates to everything, really, from the players. Like, we can handle losing as West Ham fans, I feel like. I'm not speaking for all West Ham fans, but I think for me, all we really, really want is a player to give 110%. I can handle us losing 1-2-3-0 if I really feel like we gave everything and left it out on the pitch, which was clearly not the case against Burnley. And it just, the fans will mirror the players' enthusiasm, I really feel like, because you can tell when they're not giving their best. And Saturday, they gave 110%, and I think the fans were right behind them from the get-go, and the place was buzzing from kickoff.
Yeah, you know what? I could feel that, and when I was talking to Ben in his interview, he'll explain that in a little bit. I could feel it on the radio. I know. I don't know. Did you actually watch the game?
I did. So I was not planning on going to the pub, but I had a late night in St. Louis. I wasn't planning on staying in St. Louis overnight. I live about 30 minutes away. I was planning on driving home, but I was much too inebriated to make the drive home. And I have a buddy who lives literally right around the corner from the bar. So I just decided to crash at his place and then wake up early in the morning and walk down to the pub to watch the game. So yes, I did watch the game in its entirety.
There's no better cure to a hangover than more alcohol. So
absolutely.
I listened on the radio and then I watched Match of the Day later through BBC.com. Don't ask how I got it here. Anyway, I'm not going to self-incriminate myself, even though I just did. Anyway, listening on the radio is one of my favorite things to do. As much as I'd rather watch the game, obviously, I do enjoy listening to West Ham on the radio. I think it's really, really brings out the imagination. It's just a cool thing that kind of reminds me of the old days when we didn't have TV. Not that I was around, but I think it's just a cool type of thing to do. Anyway, I could feel the atmosphere around the ground through the radio, and it was absolutely incredible. So that just explains how the supporters got behind the team. It just was one of those days where I was really proud to be West Ham. Not that I'm not when we lose, and not that I am when we win always, but I am always proud. But I just, it was one of those moments where you just really felt it. You know what I mean? Now I'm just going in circles.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you. Yeah. The one thing about the championship that I enjoyed, because it is annoying not being able to watch the games on TV, but it has some nostalgia listening to it on the radio. There's something just classical, like nostalgic, about listening to your team play on the radio, because I personally think most radio guys are better at describing the game than the TV guys, which makes sense because they have to be much more descriptive. But I really, really enjoy listening to games on the radio. So that's cool that you got to do that. I will say, if you gave me an option of watching TV or listening on radio, obviously I'm picking TV. Right, of course, but there's something to be said about listening to games on the radio.
Okay, so now that we got done talking about the radio, what do you think about – let's just get into the actual game now. Or let's start with the lineup. What were your thoughts on the lineup?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't care for the lineup all that much. It was really good to see Masuaku back in the lineup. I know he left us on a sour note, but I think he's crucial to our team. I'll go into that a little bit later. I didn't like seeing Kouyaté back in the starting lineup. Again, I've been saying this for weeks and weeks and weeks, as have most people. He hasn't been good enough, so when I was thinking early in the morning I saw him in the lineup, I was a little disappointed. I was annoyed to see Chicharito not in the starting 11. I thought Moyes was up to his usual tricks by not playing him again, but apparently he was sick, so that's good that he's not seriously hurt or anything. Declan Rice, I was happy to see him in his natural position, where he should be. He's going to be one of the best center backs in the Premier League. I honestly believe that. At such a young age, the composure that he's shown is great. Anyway, Joe Hart, I was 50-50 on who I thought should play in goal. I don't know what, because we both said before the Burnley game that we wanted Joe Hart back in goal. And after his little bit of a, not horror show, but the third goal was definitely on him against Burnley, I was kind of surprised to see him in the starting 11 again. X said on his show that he thought he would be leaning Hart, and he was correct. But Antonio up front, not at right wing back, great to see. Although he didn't last very long in the game, which sucks. That hurts us big time. I think Antonio's huge to our season. I don't know. What did you think about it? Sorry, I didn't mean to go on that long rant there.
All right, I'll keep it short and simple. I like the Hart move. Right now, Adrian and Hart are both playing average at best. I have not been impressed with either one. And when it comes down to that exactly, I don't think one is or better than the other. I don't think either is playing better than the other. So if they're all tied, I pick Hart. Why do I pick Hart? Because I think he has to play himself into the World Cup squad. That's why.
Fair enough.
Adrian's not beating De Gea or, I mean, that Spanish, love Adrian, don't get me wrong. You're my dude. But he's not into that Spanish national team. Joe Hart, however, is trying to get the number one spot. So he knows he needs to step up, and I think that'll be a motivation to get it together. So if I had to pick one, I think it's Joe Hart.
Sure, and Joe Hart spent all week with England, so he was in intense training. I know the guys that aren't on the international duty were still in training, but I think that gives him a little bit of advantage. I know I don't think Joe Hart really, really, really thinks that he's going to get the number one spot. I think he's still playing for a World Cup roster spot. He's going to be the number three keeper no matter what. I think Gareth Southgate has already basically said that. Pickford, Butland, and maybe even Pope are going to be two of the three picked. Maybe even Heaton. You might throw Heaton in there. But Joe Hart's going to be more or less a player-coach role in England. Sorry, this isn't. We're not talking about England on the show, but that's kind of my thoughts on that. Back to what you were saying.
Yeah, England will do during the World Cup, because I did told you last week that I want to do some World Cup episodes. But anyway, I want to go into my thoughts on Rice real quick. I am glad that he is in the squad. However, I think he's played very, very well and strong for the young man. However, I just don't want to get carried away, kind of like we did with Reece Oxford. I think people got really carried away, and then he went out to Borussia Mönchengladbach, and then is just now over there and got a little big for his boots. So I hope that Declan Rice keeps growing, and it seems to me that he actually has a whole different mentality than Reece Oxford did, but we'll see how that goes. However, the rest of the lineup, I'm glad to have Masuaku back. I think he brings something that we really lacked the last 6 weeks. However, I think it really sucks that he was out for that stupid incident, and that could have been a changer to our season. So we'll see how that changes the team. Kouyaté, I was not impressed with him the last few weeks. However, we'll get into him later in this game. I thought he had a fantastic game and really stepped it up. And obviously, John Mario, Anatovich, Antonio Noble. I was cool with this lineup. Lanzini, I didn't want to rush back, so I'm glad he didn't play. I was surprised with Chicharito, but then we found out he was just sick. So that's about it. I don't really have anything positive or negative to line up, to be honest with you. I woke up right before the game and then just started driving, so I didn't really get a chance to complain or be happy about the lineup. I think it is what it is, and I thought it was disappointing that Antonio got hurt so early. And I think that's the injury bug is just added again at West Ham, as usual.
It's just typical West Ham. We get a player starting to come into some form. I think I'll say a little bit about Antonio. I think he is one of the most crucial players in our lineup. I really, really, really think that. I think he when he is fit and raring to go and he's up for it, he's probably one of our top three or four players on the pitch. I think he's that important. When he's not in the lineup, we miss pace. That's why getting Masuaku back is so important, because we have pace and attacking threat down one side, and not just one side, both sides when Antonio's fit. So having Antonio go down is a major, major, major blow for us. Hopefully it's not serious. He looked to be really, really upset. I know you didn't watch the game, but he was visibly upset when he had to come off the pitch.
I did watch Match of the Day. I did see his reaction with his shirt over his head. I mean, he looked absolutely gutted.
Yeah, and you don't want to speculate, but when you see a player react in that manner, you know that he knows that something happened that definitely should not have happened. So
I'm going to jump in there and disagree, because I don't think that's why he was upset. I think he was upset because he knew the magnitude of the game. The reason I want to bring that up is I think the players, the way they started that game, they knew that they had to take it up a notch from what they did the last three games. They knew that was absolutely disgraceful. And you know what? The fans got behind the team. The players hustled to every ball. The players I have so many positives to say that I just don't want to get on a rant. I want to keep moving. But they showed me something this week that they haven't showed me in weeks. I mean, when was the last time we won before that?
It was the Watford win, I believe.
The Watford right before the last international break, right?
Yeah, I believe it was a 2-0 win.
Right, and that was just a plaster over the band-aids over bullet holes when we were saying, oh, we looked bad, but then we beat Watford, and we're like, oh, okay, maybe it's not going to be so bad, and then we come back and get on this spree. So it was good to do a positive podcast for a change. I just think that the going into the lineup, I thought they ended up coming together, and Antonio got hurt. But then the first goal, John Mario, came from an interception off of, was it Noble, who, when John Mario closed it down and then Noble got the interception, and Kouyaté had, like I said, he stepped it up. He had that a fantastic run, almost probably 50 or 60 yards, right?
Yeah, it was at least a 40-yard run. Noble can't be not given his share of the credit for that because his interception was key. But, yeah, Kouyaté making a sprint forward that I don't know that we've seen this season, a run like that from him. Granted, there was only one or two guys back there that he had to compete with, but he was bombing forward with the ball. He looked up, he found his man, he cut it back, and Mario, although it was a slight deflection, buried it in the top corner for his first goal as a Hammer, which was, again, a relief to see. Yeah, exactly. You couldn't have come at a better time. You couldn't have asked for a better time to get your first goal. But maybe this gives him some confidence going forward that he can just go on a run of games and get all these goals. I don't know if that's his game or not, but he, like you said, great time to get a first goal. So we were thrilled with that.
I could hear the roar of the crowd. I could just feel the chills through my body when he scored that goal. And then watching Match of the Day, the absolute limbs going into the crowd. It was fantastic. So it was good for Jao to get his first goal and for us to go up 1-0.
Yeah, you don't get limbs like that at home too often.
No, you don't. And you know what? I think I texted you either yesterday, the day before the game or just before the game, that cliche saying that we need to get the first goal. Course you always want to get the first goal, but I thought if there was ever a day that I knew we were not coming from 1-0 down, it was on Saturday. So it was essential and crucial that we got that first goal, and we did. So
agreed.
Was Antonio's injury before or after that?
I believe it was before our first goal. I could be mistaken on that.
Joe, who we didn't even give shouts to. I know we're going in order and I'm getting a little excited. How about Fernandez?
Oh, yeah. I was going to get... Yeah.
Absolute hell of a game.
Agreed. Yeah, Antonio got injured in the 9th minute, and then Mario scored in the 13th minute. Yeah, we are jumping around. But Fernandez is a guy that I've been very critical of in the past. And not because I think he's shit or anything like that. I didn't think he was ready to be a regular Premier League player. Right. I didn't think he gave us enough in the lineup. But he came in. So he ended up going into a wingback position, though, didn't he, if I'm not mistaken? You didn't watch the game. But he played in a defensive role, I believe, and he played absolutely phenomenal. He gave passion, effort. He gave it all.
He wouldn't have been wingback if he came in for Antonio.
Yeah, but the lineup did switch around quite a bit when he came on. I could be wrong.
Did Masuaku move up into the... Either way.
Yeah, I was at the bar slightly inebriated, so my memory is a little fuzzy, if I'm honest.
Okay.
I was absolutely thrilled with Fernandez's performance. I think he put in one hell of a shift, as did every other player, but he, you're right, does deserve special mention.
Yeah, so then, let's see, the second goal was Marco when he took that amazing header. Fairly good save by the goalkeeper. I mean, it was point blank right there. However, and somebody was given I don't even remember is it McCarthy? What was their keeper's name?
I think it was McCarthy. I got it right in front of me though. I can check for us. It was McCarthy.
Yeah. Okay. So good. Always touch your gut, folks. Anyway, some people were giving him some crap for spilling it. It was a point blank header. No, I don't think that. Any harm on McCarthy, but Marco just picked up the rebound and slotted it home off of his fantastic header to begin with, and we are up 2-0. After that, I was feeling really comfortable. What?
Arnautovic could have probably scored right before that too. He curled one just wide. He really should have scored. Like he loves playing against Mark Hughes. The Stoke game we went to, he could have scored 6 or 7
when he hit the post. Oh man, he absolutely tortured that Stoke defense that day.
Yeah, he did. So that kind of reminded me that finish where he knew he should have scored. For him to come right back and get another one right away, awesome. Makes me happy. I love that man. He's turning into a bit of a cult hero. I don't know. You think that?
Oh, he's one of my favorite players because he's such an asshole. He's like he is yeah. Everything I wanted to be in life. I remember when I played soccer in high school, when I actually got into the game, I just played like an asshole because I wasn't really that good. So I had to use just blunt power and no skill, just being a jerk to hopefully rattle people. And I feel like that's what Marco does, but with actual skill. So he's literally everything I want to be in life. And then he didn't do it on the first goal because he did. First goal is when he shouted at Mark Hughes. The second goal is when he ran in front of the Southampton fans with his tongue out, right?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, so absolute legend for giving the crossed irons and yelling at Mark Hughes. I think that was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I just absolutely – anytime a player throws up the crossed hammers in a celebration, my dick gets a little hard. So I absolutely love when players do that. It just – it means a lot to us when they do that. It just – it's a sign of love and that they're
– If you kiss the badge or throw up the crossed irons, crossed hammers, I'm absolutely loving it. It just makes me – makes you instantly one of my top favorite players. I mean, even when IU did it that one game, I was just like, yo – I kind of want this guy.
Yeah, and then the third goal was, again, shows the importance of Arthur Masuaku because without him in our lineup, I'm going to go into my Masuaku little tangent here.
You're wearing his jersey right now, aren't you?
What's that?
Are you wearing your Masuaku jersey right now?
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm wearing my Arthur.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he is probably, I won't say our most important player, but he's up there with Antonio because he gives us pace. He is the most tricky player that we have on the ball. Maybe Lanzini too, but Masuaku, if the ball's at his feet and he's going one-on-one with a player, I have full confidence in him that he's going to get past that player because they're scared to lunge in on him because they know that he'll meg him in 2 seconds and be right around him, or he'll do a little dink and get right by him. He is our most influential player when he has the ball, meaning he can dictate what the D does because if they come out on him, he's splitting them and he's going around them. If they back off, he's going to push them and push them and push them until he gets that cross back in. And that's exactly what happened for Arnautovic's second goal right before halftime. I think it was probably a 50-yard sprint with the ball. And then what an absolute inch perfect cross.
Oh, I mean, dude, you could not have slipped it right in there.
You could not have put a better cross if you wanted to. I mean, literally all Arnautovic had to do was turn his foot sideways and guide it right into the back of the net. So
he did with perfection because he could have absolutely easily messed that up too. I just want to point that out.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. I can't say enough about Masuaku. I'm so glad that he's back. And then Arnie to just get to run right in front of the Southampton fans is always good. Always good to get them riling.
So the next section of the Southampton recap is just the game flow in general. I think that just goes into the second half from when I was listening, and you can correct me on watching match of the day. It just sounds like we just held on strong. I'm glad we didn't push hard for a fourth or fifth. Cresswell had that rocket at the end. But in general, it sounds like we just took the energy out of the game, shut them down, and absolutely dominated. Because did Joe Hart even get tested once on Saturday?
They had zero attempts on target.
Right. So we did a fantastic job closing the game out for the last 45 minutes. Because in true West Ham fashion, we could have easily blew a 3-0 lead. I could totally see us doing it. So
yeah, I was like, the only West Ham fans could be nervous being 3-0 up.
At home.
Yeah.
So, no, we did a good job taking the wind out of their sails and just finishing out the game. So I was really happy. I was very excited to do this podcast. I was ready to go, I'll tell you that.
I couldn't agree anymore. Just to chime in on what the overall thoughts on the game. I don't know if you want to move into that because the game flow, as you said,
overall thoughts.
It was It was a very professional second half, I thought.
Yep.
We didn't try anything stupid. We didn't try anything fancy, although, like you said, that that corner that Cresswell smashed off the bar, off the top of the bar.
That was quite
I don't know if you heard his post-game interview, but
no.
He said he was a little disappointed in Mario that he didn't put the ball a couple another foot up to where he didn't have to lunge at it so much. So that's kind of funny. They must have worked on that on the training ground.
In Miami.
But yeah, probably in Miami. But as I said, it was a very professional performance in the second half. Nothing stupid. Just get the job done. 3-0 up. You don't have to do anything fancy. Just bring it home. And that's exactly what they did. And the D made it easy on Joe Hart. And they also shut down Charlie Austin, who I incorrectly tweeted before the game. I said he would score at least 2 goals. And he didn't even get a sniff of the goal. So that's awesome. I thought he would definitely come back to haunt David Sullivan after his knee ligament.
He always does.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels like he always does. So that was not a bad prediction in your part.
And so my overall thoughts on the game, honestly, my man of the match was Cheku Kouyaté. I thought he was our best player. Defensively, he was sound. He tracked back. The biggest thing difference that I saw in him, he was sprinting back when he needed to. I mean, he was bombing back when he had to. And then when he got the ball at his feet going forward, he wasn't scared to run forward with it, that we haven't seen in a long time either. He was connecting passes, which I haven't seen in a long time.
You feeling okay? So, I wasn't expecting that from you.
Yeah, I know. I've been one of his biggest critics. So, but he was one of my favorite players in the Allardyce days in the first year under Bilic. He really was. I mean, he was, in my opinion, the first name on the team sheet that during those years. So I don't want to be a Kouyaté hater. I want to throw that out there. I want to love him, and I thought he put his best shift that I've seen in
lately,
probably 2 years at least. So he was my man of the match. Honorable mention, we talked about him before. Edmilson Fernandez, what an effort he came in. I've been a big critic of him. He shut it down, and it was cool, calm, and collected on the ball. He was passing well, which that's been my biggest issue with him, is his turning of the ball. He turns the ball over way too much, in my opinion.
Yep.
And he did not at all. And then I love seeing his celebration for Arnautovic's first goal. He was right there on the goal line, pumping his fists. And
as a
that
team.
Was good. Yeah, Noble, another solid game from him. He can't do a foot wrong. Arnie, obviously, we've talked about him. He's amazing. He's a god. I love him. Honorable mention to Declan Rice. Amazing game as well. I mean, there's 11 guys on the pitch to put in a good performance.
And that's what we finally needed. And that's what we finally needed.
Yep.
Okay, so
Joe Hart, I'm sorry, one more thing on Joe Hart. Everyone said he didn't have anything to do, which is mostly true, but there were a couple of corners that he had to go up for. Yeah, there was a couple of corners that he had to go up for and rise above everyone to get, and he did it perfectly. And kept keeping the back line organized, he did that beautifully. So there's not anyone on the pitch that doesn't deserve praise, in my opinion.
Which is perfect timing going into a little bit of Q&A. Or we're just going to use our comments this week rather than Q&A as bullet points. I want to talk about what Logan Bowser said to you specifically, even though he said to you, I'm going to read it and then you answer it. Not to sound negative, but is it lack of quality from Southampton or great performance from us that got us the result? I'll let you answer first, but I got some things there too.
I think it was a bit of both. I think it was more of us being brilliant. I honestly, truly believe that we gave it all, and we finally played like we're capable of playing. But there's no denying that Southampton are shit, and they were shit on the day. They were their passing wasn't good. Their creativity was non-existent. They were all over the place on the back line. So I think there is a part to play in both camps. But I honestly believe that more of it had to do with us being so good on the day. I really, really thought that we put in a professional, it's the best word I can say it, a professional shift. And it was the first time that we have scored three goals in the first half. I can't remember the stat now, but it's been a long ass time since we've scored three goals in the first half.
It would have to be. We haven't this season.
No, it's been like 10, 20, 30. I don't know, remember how long it was, but it was, it's been a long, 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 long time.
And you know what? I do want to say that I thought it was a combination of both teams not really, like, us playing exceptionally well. I think it goes back to my comments earlier in the pod when I was saying how we were fighting as a team and fighting for each ball 50-50, you know. I think that plays into a factor that the fans got behind the team. The team gave us something to get behind in the first place. I thought there was a funny tweet that said something about you know how everyone was blaming the fans for the poor performance on the pitch. Well, everyone's like, well, should we thank the fans? You know, we scored three goals rather than thanking the team. They should be thanking the fans. I thought that was kind of funny, but
that is funny.
But back most importantly, when to the question, I think Southampton are really, really struggling right now, and we took advantage of it, and as we should, you know.
Amen.
I would have been disappointed if we didn't. So I thought we put in a good professional performance. I think that was the perfect word that you said about 5 minutes ago, and we got the job done. So kudos to the guys. I was really, really proud.
And one more thing. We didn't even mention it at all. I thought the owners should have stayed away, and they were there. Obviously, it didn't affect the game at all, but I honestly was shaking my head that they were even there. We don't even have to talk about that. It was a little out of place to even say that, but I just wanted to say that. I was really annoyed when they showed them on the TV at the beginning of the game.
No, I don't disagree. I think that if we would have went 1-0 down, I think it could have caused a lot of trouble, and I think that they got lucky that they were there. A lot of people are going to say that it's their club, so they should be able to go if they want, blah, 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 blah. I don't disagree with you. I just think that just the optics and knowing the supporters, what would be best for the – you should do what's best for you. I don't know.
I think part of it, I mean, them being there potentially could have helped us get relegated. So that's just my whole thing on that. And speaking of relegation, we have another Scott Davis, a regular listener. He sent us a question. He said, will 36 points keep us up this season? And I don't know what you think the cutoff line is going to be this year.
I don't know, man, because I'm not really sure, because I think that we are looking really good right now. If we go off of what happened on Saturday, I think we are 5 points clear of 18th, right?
Yeah, I don't have the table in front of me, but we're on 33 points now, up to 14th. I can pull up the table really quickly here. Yeah, we are 5 points above Southampton.
Should be Southampton
in 18th.
Right.
Yeah, right. They're on 28.
So if we're on 20, I mean, if we're on 33, they're on 28. They have equal amount of games, but we also are up 3 points on Palace and have a game in hand. Now that game in hand is Manchester United, but still, you never know. We are 6 points up on Stoke. And we are 13 points up on West Brom. So I'm not concerned about West Brom. We are up on Swansea now, same amount of games. And we're up on Huddersfield now with a game in hand. Like I said, that game is Man United. I don't want to say that I'm comfortable, because I'm certainly not comfortable. I'm not going to be comfortable until the 90th minute after the Everton game if we are up. However, I think that we have put ourselves in a better position. I could tell you at least that.
It's certainly you can exhale a little bit now. Like, okay, we've got some breathing space. To answer his question, 36 points. I think that will be the line. The way these teams are playing right now, all three of them are in dire, dire, dire situations. Like, usually this time of year, these tables near the bottom start winning games. And that just hasn't happened. Like, West Brom are probably the worst team that I've seen in the Premier League since I've been alive. And I know it sticks in your head more.
But Sunderland.
The future. The pre- Sunderland were really bad, but Sunderland were giving themselves a fighting chance, I thought.
No, but that's what I was saying, right. Excuse me. But that's what I was trying to explain more so to the point you were correct, as in there's always the teams somehow, some way pick up stupid wins. I think I talked about it last week. There's always a game that we remember. I remember when Sunderland beat Chelsea, like 2-1 one year or something like that, like with a few weeks to go. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right.
They had like the greatest escape for like three seasons in a row. West Brom do definitely rival Southampton of last year, though, under David Moyes. That team was just absolute chaos. They were terrible. So West Brom, as far as I'm concerned, they are down. They're done and dusted. Losing against Burnley, I think they're down. Stoke, they still have a shot. Southampton still have a shot to get out of it. But Stoke, they can't win a game either. Although their last game was against Arsenal, but 3-0, I mean, that's a game where you'd like to at least see some fight, and it didn't seem like they had it. And Southampton, they keep losing every single week. They lost last week or 3 weeks ago against Newcastle 3-0 as well. So when you lose 3-0 to two relegation rivals in consecutive match weeks, that doesn't bode well for you exactly. And these teams, their run-in is almost just as bad as ours is. So my opinion, the cutoff line is going to be low this season. I honestly don't see them picking up many more points off of current form. That's just based off of their current form. I can't see them winning games. I just don't. Crazier things have happened. This is the Premier League, after all. The best league in the world, most exciting league in the world. I truly believe that. So if I had to point a points total, I think it's either going to be 36 or 37 keeps you up. So based on that, we need one more win, and I think we're probably safe. Maybe a win and a draw, but I think we can get that. I honestly do.
So next week, Stoke have Tottenham, West Brom and Swansea. Swansea is away to West Brom, so hopefully that's tricky for them. Huddersfield's at Brighton, so you don't know how that's going to end. Palace are at Bournemouth, and we're at Chelsea. Southampton are at Arsenal. So I can see Southampton losing, West Ham losing. We'll get into that. Hopefully we don't, but we'll get into that. Stoke losing. Swansea could pick up a result. And I see Huddersfield losing to Brighton because they're on the road. And Bournemouth playing okay. I could see them either beating or taking a draw to Palace as well. So I feel like the table is going to stay stagnant next week at least.
Sure. Fair enough. I agree.
Okay. So that was that. Do you have anything else about relegation? Other than we need to get results, do you have us getting any other results the rest of the season? Because I told you my two.
Yeah, so I had us finishing on 35 points. I actually had us losing in my predictor. I had us losing that Southampton game. So that's 3 points I didn't expect us to get. I think the Stoke at home game is the massive, massive, massive game. There's no other way around it. So the two games that we can get points from this season left, in my opinion, or at least we should be expected to at least be in the running to pick up the points, is Stoke at home and Everton at home. The rest of the games are not very kind to us. And this season we beat Chelsea once this season, so let's not write that off completely just yet. But I don't know. I just don't know. Because we somehow get these exciting results against the big teams sometimes, so it's tough. But if you'd expect the rest of the games... Oh, I forgot about Leicester. I guess
that's who I had us getting. I had us getting a draw to Leicester, a draw to Man City. I know that sounds crazy. I know it sounds crazy. But if they beat Manchester United on Saturday at 12:30...
They have the league wrapped up.
They have the league wrapped up. They win the league.
Yeah.
So are they really going, and while they have Champions League and stuff, are they really going to play the top squad? Are they still in the big cups?
No, they're out of the Carabao Cup.
That's already gone.
Yeah,
though.
Obviously. Or no, they won the Carabao Cup. They're out of the FA Cup.
Are they?
Yeah, they lost to Wigan. Wigan beat them.
Oh, that's right. Okay, well, they still have Champions League.
Yeah, so, Champions League's a big one. And that game can get moved, I learned. I was talking to our good friend, and he said if Man City win their Champions League leg, that game gets moved back to Saturday, one day ahead, I believe. Don't quote me on that. I know they're going to want, in their minds, they could be the greatest Premier League team ever, I believe. I still think they can, again, don't quote me on that. I should probably do my research before I talk. But I still believe they have a shot to be one of the best Premier League teams in history. So they will have that still going for them. So we have Chelsea away, Arsenal away, City at home, Leicester away, Everton away. So I can see us winning against Stoke. Arsenal, probably not. Chelsea, probably not. City, definitely not. I don't think we even have a shot.
I still think we're going to draw. I swear we're going to draw against City. Call me crazy. That's probably the hottest take you'll ever get on this podcast.
Put your money where your mouth is and put a bet on them like I did.
No, I'll pass on that. But I honestly think that we could possibly do them. No, it sounds crazy. Anyway.
When we have another question in here from Joshua, another regular listener. Thank you, Josh, for submitting another question for us. And I think it's a really good question. Mario showed his class yesterday, and he looks like he could be a real asset for the Hammers. Should we pay the high fee that Inter Milan are wanting and keep him long term? Or is he not worth that price tag? It sounds like it's going to be around £37 million is what they're wanting. And that is a lot of cash. What do you think?
I hope we do not. I like Joao. I think he's been actually pretty dang good so far. I don't think he's been exceptional, but I think he's been solid for coming in mid-season to a struggling team. Coming from Inter Milan, switching countries, hasn't played in the Premier League, and then he's just like, yeah, here you go, with a struggling team.
And will the owners even pay £37 million for a player?
Well, so my point is, I think he's done solid, but do I think that will they even pay for that? Who knows? And then, like you just said, A, will they even pay for him? And B, even if they did, is he worth 37.5? Jury's out, and I still think no, as of right this second. So my question is no. I would like to say, though, if they could get him for maybe like 17 or 20, yeah, I would do that. But not for 37. I mean, that's an exceptional. For 37, rather than Joao, if we can keep Lanzini, I'd rather get a holding mid like Cavallio.
I couldn't agree with you anymore. I think I'm just going to mimic basically everything you said. I think he has put in good performances with us, not fantastic or mind-blowing performances for us. But there's a reason he plays for the Portugal international team with Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't think that can be understated. I think he had an assist on one of Ronaldo's goals this last week. He is a above average creative player for us. I think he is better suited, honestly, when Lanzini's not in the lineup because he gets more freedom. I think that's why he was more effective. And I could be mistaken on that, but it seems like they play a similar style of game. $37 million is a lot. I think it's too high. If I were the owners, I wouldn't pay the money. And God knows they're not paying £37 million for anyone. I really don't think so. But as you said, if their offer to us gets reduced in the 15, 20, maybe pushing 22, 23 million, because I don't think he's a better player than Arnautovic, and we paid $25 million for him, if I'm not mistaken.
Agreed.
I would not price him over that at all.
All right, $20 million? Interesting question for you. Would you take him on another season loan?
Yeah, I probably would. And the owners would probably be all over that. I don't think that he would probably want that. And because I know players like security and stability. And an international player like that probably doesn't want to go out on loan for 2 years in a row. But, yeah, if that was offered to us, I'd take it again. Let him work it out and hopefully get another great season out of him. So, yeah, I'd do that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, I don't know. It just dawned on me. I agree with you. I doubt that would actually happen. However, I was like, why not?
I totally agree. So I don't know. Do you want to get going into the next question that we have?
Yeah, so this is the part where we wanted to talk about the American West Ham meetup. Okay, so last week it came about that there's a lot of people who wanted to talk about possible American Hammers meetup. I think I wanted to explain real quick, obviously, for our American listeners, we obviously know what we're trying to do. We're going to talk about it in a second. But for the British listeners, you know, everybody goes to the match on Saturdays. So everybody has their normal groups of people who go to the pub. Everybody goes, has their normal seats in their sections, and everybody goes to the West Ham game together. So you don't really need this whole meet and greet. However, in America, we really don't know many other American supporters. Most pubs, locals, the biggest ones probably only get maybe 25 on match day. You know, you guys might have groups of 25 in the pub. And the reason we do this podcast is for our American listeners. You know, we do it obviously for the British people too, and the Chinese people, and Saudi Arabia, all around the world, all American, well, all West Ham fans in general. But this is the American West Ham podcast. And I think it would be really cool if we did get a meet and greet together. So last week, a lot of people started talking about doing it for final day against Everton, having a nationwide meetup. And there's a lot of cities being thrown around. And a lot of few people wanted to use our platform as a discussion spot. And I am totally down for that. I'm trying to work on a way that we can get maybe a forum going either on our website or somewhere else. And I can link it to the website so that it's all in one place so that people can have a discussion. Because I think Twitter is very messy when trying to do a discussion or get something done. And I'm going to be completely honest. I think there's a lot more into it than a month and a half notice entails. There's a lot of people who want to do this, and I completely agree. I think it'd be cool. However, my suggestion is to wait. I'm down with having a discussion. If everyone's like, "No, Tony, you're a fucking idiot," and we want to do it now, then sure, that's cool. Y'all, we can do your thing. I'm 100% down. I'm not trying to be like a leader. My suggestion would be to wait for two reasons. The first reason I would say to wait is because there's rumors that West Ham's coming to America this summer. That's going to be quite costly. You know, you don't want to do that for Everton on final day, meet up somewhere, and then have to try and pay to go to the actual game if they come over. Some people might say $200, and that's pocket change for them. For some others, $200 is a lot of money to spend because it's more than that: hotel, food, game ticket, etc. So to keep it moving rather than ranting, my suggestion would be to wait until November next year. Start planning something when the schedule comes out. Pick a game that we know that can't be moved for FA Cup or Champions League. So pick like against a whack opponent, and then plan a nationwide meetup that we all meet in like a big par. My suggestions would be big major hubs that have easy transport. For example, New York, Chicago, maybe L.A., Dallas, somewhere that's easy and inexpensive for everybody to get to. There's a lot of cool people who had great suggestions. Sorry to keep it going. Brawley, I'll let you go in a second. For example, the Fresno dude, your bar was absolutely incredible. You guys had a massive space and the West Hamber Ale. I thought that was really cool. He was actually on our podcast last week. However, that's not really, in my opinion, no disrespect, a viable option because of the ability for everybody to get to that in a reasonable spot. So my suggestions would be New York, Chicago, or L.A. or Dallas. Brawley, do you have any thoughts, or we can get a discussion going now? I kind of just was doing my thing there.
No, you're totally fine. This meetup, I think, is a fantastic idea, and that's what it is right now. It's an idea. We haven't put anything into action, so this is all preliminary discussions, which is why we want to give our views on this platform, like you said. So that's something that I am totally in favor of doing. I mimic your views in the fact that this season, quite frankly, it would be impossible for me to do it this season. I wouldn't say impossible. I can pull some strings. But I don't think it's enough time notice to get anything practically done in that amount of time. So I share your views on that. I also would rather spend money to go see West Ham play in the summer like we did in North Carolina or
awesome.
Like Seattle.
That's where we first met.
I had a great time. Yep, absolutely. It was a great day. It was one of my favorite memories, honestly. If they come this year, I really, really, really hope they choose a city like Chicago or Kansas City would be doable, or Nashville against another decent team. So that's just me hoping on that, which really doesn't pertain to our discussion. But my advice to anyone wanting to plan a trip this year would be, there are people like me who are still in college who don't have a lot of money. I probably could not afford to do two trips. And I know there's millions, not millions, but there's a ton of other people out there that are probably thinking the same way. So I would not dismiss, but I would advise not to do a game this season. If the club do decide to come in the summer, amazing. We will definitely all meet up there. If we can, again, I hope it's a central city, so that makes it easier, because Seattle was impossible for me to get to for a reasonable price. It's so far away. I couldn't drive. I would have to fly and then potentially rent a car, hotel, all that jazz. North Carolina, I made work. It's on the East Coast. That's where a lot of our fans are, on the East Coast. So, again, I hope it's in a Midwestern city. So if the club listen, please pick a Midwestern city. And again, we talked about the Miami training. I'm going off on a little bit here, but the Miami training, apparently, while they were here, they were talking to numerous clubs about hosting us in a friendly. So that was, if you're knocking that trip now, which I don't think anyone is because we won, but they were down to business, according to X, talking with a number of U.S.-based clubs, MLS and USL and NASL, although the NASL doesn't exist. But they were talking to both USL clubs and MLS clubs. So
can I jump? Wait, are you still going?
I was, but yeah, you can chime in.
I just want to note, folks, that whether it's good for us or not, I really don't care. If there's something that's better for the greater good that doesn't suit me, I'd rather people do that. I just wanted to put that out there real quick. I didn't want to come off sounding like an absolute homer where, well, if it doesn't work for me, I'm not doing it. No, I'm fine. I would also like to make sure that everybody's included if something was to get done. If I'm completely honest, I don't really want the responsibility of putting this together. I don't want to come off as an elitist either. That's why I don't really want to do this, if I'm completely honest with you. I think that some people are getting that vibe from us. I'm like, whatever. But in reality, if something works for everybody else, then we'll make it work. I don't want us to come off like, well, if it doesn't work for us, then we're not doing it. We're all West Ham. The other thing I want to say real quick is, apparently I didn't know, like, there's one group that we're in. I didn't know there was another American Hammers group. Apparently there's like two different groups on Facebook. I wanted to point out that we want to make, I think that if something was to ever happen for our American listeners who want to put this together, I think that we need to make sure that everybody's included. That's like Los Angeles and California and Seattle and San Diego, all the people out there, Phoenix, Vegas. The way it sounds to me from reading on Facebook and Twitter, a lot of our West Coast Hammers feel not included with a lot of things, which I hope that they are included. Very much so in discussions. That's all I wanted to add real quick.
Yeah, good. I totally agree. I mimic all of the things you just said. I just want to finish off with me saying next year would be a much better time to pick a location and a date. We can get it organized now. That's great. Give us like 10 or 7 months notice or whatever. With your suggestion of November, that's a little tricky because I have a wedding in November. So
as we again, just got done saying, if it doesn't
work. Yeah. So yeah, please.
Well, I think November, December makes the most sense. Where if you schedule it in August when the fixtures come out, that's what I was saying. That still gives you. That's still. I know, but it still gives you 4 months notice if you schedule it in August. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, fair enough. I do agree. We need to pick a game that's not going to get moved due to TV. We've had far too many instances of nightmare. Our friends up in the Toon Army America, they planned a national meetup for either it's sometime in the next month that they had it planned, and the Everton Newcastle game got moved. So their meetup, they had it planned for almost 8 months. That game got moved. Again, no one thinks Newcastle Everton, like, why would that game get picked for TV? So I feel really bad for them. They got screwed hard. I have good friends in Toon Army Chicago, Toon Army St. Louis. So I have talked to them in depth about a national meetup. And they got screwed hard, and I feel bad for them. Because they were having it in Chicago at AJ Hudson's. They were going to have it, and the game got moved to the TV. So that...
I know how you feel about TV stuff.
There's flights already been booked and stuff. So we just need to be smart in our planning and do our homework and make sure... it works for everyone. We do want to be all inclusive, and we'll do our very best to help in any way we can on this show.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree that we would like to be involved. I think that there should be some sort of a committee, in my personal opinion, not just one forum doing it. So not one American Hammers group, not one Overland and Sea group, not the American West Ham podcast group. I think there should be a committee of people putting it together. So because we're all volunteers as well. No one's getting paid to do this. So the responsibility and onus will get done on everybody. So that's just my penny for my thoughts.
Good. So I guess we can kind of do a little transition here because we pretty much got to most of the questions that we have. I don't know. Were you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say that we're actually pretty far on time, and I also have an interview here to toss in. So let's kick it over to Ben's interview. All right. Here we got Ben here, and he's joining us from – are you in London still?
Yep, I'm still in London. I'm here till next Friday, actually.
Oh, man, you got a little bit of a trip going. So Ben's joined us from London, and he was at the game yesterday. He was yesterday as in Saturday against Southampton, his first ever West Ham match, and we are glad to have you on. Brawley is out right now, so it's just going to be you and me for this afternoon. How's that sound?
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Glad to be on.
Awesome. So I think I want to start with the whole day event. Rather than just jumping right in, when did you, or even the whole process, when did you decide that you like, you know, I finally have to make it over, or how did you get yourself over for the first time?
Well, let's see. I wanted to go to a game at the Bolin for the final season, but it just didn't work out because for these trips for Americans to travel over to London, it takes a while to plan.
Right. All right, so let's just cut to the point where – when did you fly over now?
So we flew over Thursday night.
So because
– actually, Thursday day, and we got there at 7:30 a.m. Friday British time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because my biggest struggle, I think, when I went over for the first time was I had a day before the game, and I felt like that was the longest day of my life. Did you feel that way?
I know. Yeah, I couldn't sleep. I did not sleep well. I was so nervous. Even when I got to the game, I was super nervous for the game.
All right. So, and I think you mentioned you went with your fam?
Yeah, with my mom and my dad.
Oh, that's cool. So, now, before we get into the actual pregame and all that, do they like soccer too, or do they just go because it's your thing?
I got my mom into it, but my dad's a soccer fan. Like, I played soccer growing up, and my dad was my soccer coach, but he's a huge Barca fan.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I'm trying to get him into the West Ham thing, but my mom's definitely in it with me.
Nice. I got my mom her first jersey when I took her over against Palace last year, and she wore it this weekend, so it must have been lucky. Did you guys do anything special before the game? Did you go early? Did you go to any pubs? What did you guys do?
We actually did the pre-match stadium tour.
Oh, haven't heard anyone do that. Is it nice?
I definitely recommend it. It's amazing. Like, you get to go into the locker rooms. You get to go sit in the director's box, but like a press box that would be right next to it.
Right.
And you get to go on the field before the game, walk out the tunnel, sit in the manager's seat on the field. It got me really hyped up for the game. So I totally recommend doing a stadium tour before the game. It was awesome.
Must be the lucky man. Okay, so what was the atmosphere like inside the ground before the game? Was it like, did you feel like people were getting behind the team, or were you feeling nervous?
Everybody was nervous before the game started. It was pretty quiet until we got close to kickoff, and when the team news came on at the stadium, everybody's like, "Where's Lanzini? Where's Chicharito?" We knew Lanzini was a doubt, but Chicharito wasn't even on the bench.
Right, that was so officially. I think he came down with illness or something like that late. But yeah, I was caught off guard.
Yeah, so after the team news, I was more nervous. But once we got closer, we sang Bubbles. I think we all tried to get behind the team because we knew it was a big game.
Okay, so your first ever – did you go to any of the games when the team was in the United States?
Yep, I went to the game in Cary, North Carolina.
Oh, shit, so was I. That's funny. We probably met.
Wow.
Anyway, because the reason I was asking, I was going to see if that was your first live Bubbles. I guess that was your first actual Bubbles in London.
Yeah.
Did you have chills? I'm just getting chills talking to you about it, and I wasn't even there this weekend.
When we were singing, you just felt the unity of everybody coming together behind the team, because we knew this was just a humongous, humongous game for our season. But it was surreal. It was surreal.
So one thing that was different for me than usual is I actually had to listen to on the radio because I was driving. And I could hear the atmosphere. What was it like when that first goal went in?
It was relieving. It was so relieving. But it was awesome. I mean, I can't even describe it. Everybody was so excited. And it's João Mário's first goal. A great time to get it as well.
Oh, yeah, we needed it. I was luckily when I was driving, I didn't fly off the road too quickly.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So if I could ask you, so João Mário's goal goes in, the sigh of relief sounded even in the air through the radio that the tensions came back a little bit. Did you feel like if Southampton would have scored first, it would have been a different story?
Yeah, I was just about to say, the first goal in that game was going to be crucial for either team. I mean, if they scored the first goal, you could have imagined what would have happened.
Oh, it would have been absolute carnage.
Yeah, so it was we needed to get the first goal, and we got it. And even when we got that first goal, we still kicked on after that, and we got the second one short after through Marco.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go with next. I felt that we didn't even sit back. It sounded like, and like I said, you're there, I wasn't. It felt like they just kept roaring forward rather than just sitting back 1-0 hoping we get it. I mean, we ended up smashing them up.
Yeah. I mean, you could see the team, they huddled right before the game. You could see that they were going in for each other. They were pushing. They were pressing every minute. It was a very good team performance. And I was actually very surprised by Fernandez coming on for Antonio, because once Antonio went off, I was like, oh, shit. Like, this is going to get even worse. But Fernandez came on. The midfield did great. Because I thought with the five at the back, you know, we sit back and – but – It was complete opposite. We were pushing the whole time, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's something that makes me nervous sometimes is when we sit back too much. I was watching Match of the Day, and you can confirm this for me. I felt like the team chased down balls more. They put 10 times more effort than they did in the last few games. It felt like an entirely different team out there.
It did. I mean, I don't know what David Moyes did, but he personally had to turn it around for himself because he was in some trouble too. I mean, if he lost that game, I mean, oof.
Yeah, we would have been in trouble. He would be in some trouble. I guess that trip to Miami worked out.
Yeah, yeah.
And then last, Marco, on that third goal, did you see him run into Mark Hughes, or were you just celebrating and doing all that?
I was celebrating. I didn't. I read after the game that he went up to Mark Hughes. I saw that he stuck his tongue out. But I mean, Mark. I don't like Mark Hughes, and Marco showed him who's boss. I mean, in that goal, the cross from Masuaku, I thought it was huge having him back.
Yeah.
His skill on the wings, on the wing backs, you know.
Which makes me think, man, if he wasn't out for those 6 weeks, do you think maybe it would have been different?
I think it would have. I mean, considering we played, I mean, the one time Antonio played there, he did good. I don't think that's his position.
No, I didn't think he cut it. I love the guy, but I didn't think he cut it. He was a little on the slower side. If you're going to play wing backs, you need that pace.
Yeah, Masuaku definitely brings the pace and the skill to play on that left and be more direct.
So my next question for you is, final whistle blows, did you guys do anything special after the game, or did you take it in? Did you stay later? Like, how did, if you could sum it up all in one, your experience all together for me.
Well, actually, the one surprising thing was about the 80th minute. People were just pouring out of the stadium.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't realize how much people just like to leave early at the end of the, even if we're winning. Like, we're winning 3-0. Don't want to stay till the final whistle.
But yeah, it's tough, man, because I remember, because like I said, I lived over there and I still have my season tickets, and when I'm over there, it's weird. Whenever we're up or down big, people want to get out because the queues for the tube. Oh, yeah, so did you guys take the tube? Did you take how did you guys get there?
Yeah, we took the tube. We took the tube.
Okay, so you had that full experience. So at least maybe going after, it wasn't that bad because everybody filed out. But
yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, we stayed for like five more minutes after. Took some more pictures, some final pictures. Took it in for one last time because it's going to be a while before I go to another game.
Well, I was going to say, did you start planning your next trip yet?
Yeah, I'm trying to go to a game every time I want a spring break for either next year in college. Because, I wish they played. I heard they're supposed to come to America this summer, so hopefully I'll go to a game when they come over here. But I'm definitely trying to go to at least one game each year because it's just so special to go to those games. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I try to do around two or three trips a season. But the key, and I tell this to, we talk about this every time, because I don't, did you listen to the episode with Bobby after the Burnley game? I was telling him, your next trip, you got to go an away game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could, like, even when the Southampton fans were there, I could just feel hostility towards them. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine what it's like going to, like, a Tottenham game or, like, away.
Yeah, who knows? Next season, Millwall gets promoted. Who knows? They're getting close to the championship playoff, man.
Yeah, they're in the mix. That'd be a good one to go to.
Yeah, I know, but everyone's grinning and trying to get that game, man.
Yeah, I feel like an away day, it's just a lot of chanting and singing togetherness. It'd be fun.
Yeah, going to a home match for your first game is always, I think, important. I think it's really cool. You get to soak it all in. But then once you get to go to an away game, man, it's nothing. There's nothing like it. I mean, I think if you probably hear Brawley say the same thing if he was here. There's nothing like it, man. Now, there's also nothing like getting smacked up 4-0 on the road all the way up north, but at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you have anything else fun before I let you go? Anything else fun planned for your trip?
We're just going to go sightseeing. I wish I could stay for another game, go to the Chelsea game, but got to get back to the States and get back to school. But it was just an awesome experience. I'm glad that I'm able to share it with you on the American West Ham podcast. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, it's been of a course, pleasure. Man.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on. I really appreciate that. I hope you keep listening, and we hope to have you on again soon sometime, yeah?
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks, Tony.
All right, thanks, dude.
All right, we do want to say thanks to Ben again for doing that interview with us. I haven't I wasn't a part of it, and I haven't actually heard it yet, so I'm excited to hear that when the show gets played back. And thanks, Tony, for you taking time out of your day doing that too, because we're recording on Easter Sunday right now, and I had both my family and my fiance's family Easter family gatherings to go to. So I've been unavailable all day. So thank you, both of you guys, for doing that for us. I'm sure it was a great interview. And now we'll kind of kick it over into our Chelsea preview. And my dad actually asked a question submitted on Twitter, and he asked, are Chelsea there for the taking next week? Or will it be the Stoke game that makes us or breaks us? And he's referring to, obviously, the fact that Chelsea lost to Tottenham for the first time since 1990 in the league. It's been, 28 years?
At the Bridge or in general?
In general. They haven't, in the Premier League, they haven't beaten Tottenham, Tottenham haven't beaten Chelsea in 28 years since 1990.
Really?
Yeah. That's crazy.
I can't believe that. Right. Oh, wow. Okay.
It is right. It is right. I promise you it's right.
So are they there for the taking? No. No, they're not. I think we're more likely to get mollywopped this weekend upcoming than we were if they would have won. Feels nasty. I was rooting for Chelsea, hoping they would get a result so that maybe they would let their guard down against us. However, I feel like because they lost to Spurs, really going to need some points with Arsenal playing Stoke. I think we get absolutely wrecked on Sunday. I hope we do not. My prediction is 3-1 loss. I'm hoping for a 1-0 win. However, like I said, I'm predicting loss there. I think we get absolutely trashed because they come out angry. But maybe we come out with momentum after beating Southampton and push on. Who knows? What do you think?
I kind of disagree with you a little bit. I think they are a club that are, for their standards, are in a little bit of a disarray. I wish I could complain about being in fifth or sixth place. I wish I could do that. We're just not in that position. Conte is under a lot of pressure right now because their fans are desperate for Champions League. So, in my opinion, I think it's kind of like how we were. I think if we get a goal early, if we go one up, we really could really put some pressure on them and take it to them. I won't say they're there for the taking, but I think with them losing, I think that does more good than harm for us, honestly. So, my prediction, it's tough. I can't predict a win. I can't say we'll beat Chelsea away. I'll go for a 0-0 draw. I think another Sam Allardyce 19th century football performance gets the job done at Stamford Bridge, and we take home a 0-0 draw.
One of my absolute favorites was that December game. I don't know if y'all heard that dinging. Sorry, that was my dryer.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Wait, you could hear that?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dryer is really weird. Anyway, folks, December, whatever year it was, when Chelsea had 31 shots and we had, zero or one and tied 0-0.
Yeah, 1.
What an absolute game that was. So Brawley's going 0-0. I'm going 3-1 loss, even though I'm hoping for a win. And then let's just hit us with some Twitter questions or Twitter thoughts about this podcast. Give us your feedback, folks. Did you like the pod? Did you not like it? Thoughts on the meetup? Thoughts on the Chelsea game? Chat with us because I like answering questions on Twitter and hearing myself talk. So that's at West Ham Pod USA. Again, our email is AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. And then our website where you can hear the podcast, but even though you're already listening to it, so that sounds stupid, AmericanWestHamPodcast.com. We also have other great content on there. And like I said, I'm trying to work on a forum section. Anything else you want to toss out there, Raleigh, before we end it up here?
Yeah, we didn't have a American Hammer spotlight this week. I have gotten a lot of praise from people about that section of our show from non-West Ham and West Ham fans and non-West Ham fans. They say they love that section. They think it's a great idea. So that will be back soon, as soon as we get another one planned. It just didn't quite fit in our show today. But other than that, I don't have anything else.
Yeah. The holiday. All right. Well, I guess we'll finish it off with thank you again for listening. Really appreciate that. Happy holidays and come on, you Irons.